Hey there, beautiful people. Welcome to Fanti, the podcast for all those complex and complicado conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am your boy, your girl, your everything and nothing at all. Authoress times two, entertainment journalist, editor, all around bad bitch, Travell Anderson. And because I have not been interrupted yet, you know that Jared is still not here. He is still creative hiatusing or whatever. So joining me today as a very special guest host, okay, they are a writer, an educator, a DE&I consultant, and a doctor of the PhD variety. One of my good Judies. They're back for a second time on the podcast. Dr. John Paul, welcome.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hi.
Hi. I am so excited to be back. I've actually been looking forward to this since I got the ask, so I'm excited.
Yes, I'm glad that you are here. Beautiful people out there, John Paul is going to be with me the entire episode, so you're going to really get, you know, some wondrousness from them. But to get us started today, we're going to do our Pass the Popcorn segment. And, you know, it's Pride Month, right? And so y'all know what that means. A rainbow-wrapped Chipotle burrito and Chase Bank emblazoned bottles of lube for everybody. You get a lube. You get a lube. You get a lube. You know? So DJP, we were texting the other day trying to come up with topics for today's show. And one of the things you mentioned and had tweeted about actually was, you know, some of the Pride campaigns, the Pride merch that we see trotted out during this month. And we've had a bit of this convo on the pod already in last year's Pride episode. Jared and I talked about, you know, the corporatization, the foolish stuff. But I also happen to know that while you were going in on some of these Pride items, that you also own a few of these Pride merchandise from various brands.
I do.
So obviously you've got to have some complex and complicado feelings. Mm-hmm. I want to hear it. Go.
Yeah. So the complex is I appreciate the representation. I appreciate companies seeing me. I appreciate. And it's funny because what kind of started this for me was I had tweeted out, I would love to purchase something from Coach. As many of you know, I'm a huge Coach fan, even though I know people have mixed feelings about Coach and their brand.
Material girl.
Yeah. Yes, I'm on Chanel 9 boots. One day I'll be able to afford Chanel 9 boots, but right now we're just going to have to rock the Coach ones. And the mixed feeling that I have is that some of the stuff that these companies put out are just outright ugly. Like, I get it. Like, it's, yes, I get you want to include the entire rainbow. You want to include all the colors. But when I saw what Coach was rolling out, just, I said, ooh, who put that ugly bag? Who put that ugly bag? Out there with this ugly lanyard, child, these ugly sandals. And so I just, yes, I do. I appreciate a cute shirt. You know, I was in Kohl's. I saw someone, like, they have a shirt that says she is like he, she, they, them, everybody. And it was just really cute. The design was cute. But some of these companies, they just throw anything at us as queer people. And I just be like, child, it's so ugly. It's just ugly.
But here's the thing. Are we buying these items? I ask because they do them every year. Right? Yeah. Like Target started selling, I think, binders this year, right?
And
like
the cup.
Like all of the and the cup, like a pack.
Yeah, it's a so no, there's a cup. Not for that. They're selling there's this really popular cup that I see that says gay and tired that I've been seeing all over my timeline. And when I asked
A drinking cup.
It's a drinking cup, yeah. And when I asked where someone got it from, they were like, oh, I got this from Target. And that's like, I've seen it on everyone's timeline. Literally, I've seen it everywhere. So it just says gay and tired.
Well, so, you know, they do it. Yeah, they do it every single year. And it's part of me is like, people must be buying it if they keep doing it.
Yeah.
No? And then Then the question becomes, so is it just that we don't like it? Like, is it just that it just don't fit our taste? Is there somebody, you know, I don't even know where they got Walmarts anymore, but is there somebody at the Walmart in, you know, Chuckalisa, Mississippi?
And that's what, know, I think it is.
Buying up the Pride merch?
Yeah, it is. So from what I hear, and this is something that someone had posted, when I had commented, you know, that I thought the thing from Coach was ugly, someone said, you know, well, mm-hmm. you live in California where your LGBTQ-ness is celebrated like every day. And I guess that's an assumption that some people have. But in these different parts of the country where being queer is somewhat like, it's something that no one's really openly talking about, when Pride comes around and you have Target, you have Coach, you have all of these companies that are celebrating Pride, a lot of people thrive to this stuff because ultimately it's like, wow, this is the 1 month where I actually feel seen. So I can see both sides of the coin. I'm just saying from my standpoint, I think it's ugly.
You saying that though, it does remind me, I did an interview on my other podcast, What a Day, available weekday mornings on Crooked Media. I did an interview last week with Fran Tirado, yeah. who we both know in queer spaces, you know, organizer, writer, podcaster, etc. And I had a conversation with him, right, about the corporatization of Pride, about how this has been like a consistent, like ongoing conversation, right, that we've been having mm-hmm. about Pride for some time, and actually dating back to, you know, over 20 years ago. There's this interview of Sylvia Rivera yeah. that has been making the rounds over the last couple weeks, in which she was talking about even 20 years ago mm-hmm. how the queer movement, Pride movement, was becoming, you know, corporatized mm-hmm. in interesting ways. And so I say that to then say, one of the points that was brought up in that interview to what you're talking about in terms of these people who might be flocking to, you know, these big box stores in wherever they are across the country, is one of the pushbacks, if you will, that folks often say about the corporatization of Pride is that, like, in countries where being LGBTQ, right, is criminalized, mm-hmm. seeing a vodka brand, you know, with Bob the drag queen in, you know, the whatchamacallit, in the yeah. advertisement, or seeing a rainbow on, you know, Apple products, right, or yeah. Starbucks or whatever, I've heard people say that that is like one of the benefits, perhaps, mm-hmm. to this corporatization of Pride. I wonder what your thoughts are there.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think about it from this, you know, perspective. Like, I am that person, as you all know, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, I'm a huge tech head. I love Apple. I love everything that is connected to them. And so every year I get a ping from my friend when they release their Apple Pride bands. And I'm happy to know, like, there are companies, like, again, I do want to say, like, as much as I'm out here saying, you know, Pride stuff is ugly, you know, or some of the Pride stuff I see is ugly, I can also live in the vein of being like, well, Coach is donating money to the Point Foundation. And then you have, you know, Target that's donating money to mm-hmm. Gleason and mm-hmm. all these other orgs that are doing great things. So while the merch is not for me, like, I mean, Apple, same thing, Gleason, you know, GLAAD, all of these organizations that they're donating money to keep stuff alive. That's ultimately
Trevor Project. A profitable one.
Yeah. And so I live in this kind of vein of, like, while I can look at something and be like, ooh, girl, that ain't for me. Oh, that's really, really tacky. I can still sit with the idea that if it speaks to someone else and they feel seen and they feel represented, you know, in it, then mm-hmm. hey, go off and buy it, you know, because I, for me, like I said, I don't feel like it is truly fully problematic to the extent of, like, if a company I know for a fact, like, for instance, if I saw, you know, and I'm just going to call it what it is. If I saw Chick-fil-A talking about, oh, we released this, you know, rainbow, girl, if you don't get out of here with that, like, I know what you are. I know what you're about. Have a seat, right? But there are companies out there that are, even with this stuff that I deem tacky, are doing really good things for, you know, queer, specifically queer youth. And so, like I said, I think I live in the vein of, it may not be for me, but it may be for someone else. And if it's going to help someone feel seen and it's going to help someone feel like they are valued, food in whatever place of the United States or wherever in the country or outside of the country they are, I'm here for it. But I have a problem with companies and organizations who I know are doing the pink washing and ultimately haven't done anything for our community and is ultimately still profiting off of us. So
yes, they call it pink washing. They call it rainbow washing, queer washing, all of those same terms. Yeah, I think one of the things that I often like to say before we go to break on this topic is that, like, you can have the best pride campaign out there. Mm-hmm. You can have, you know, you mentioned Coach, and Coach has Saucy Santana as one of their, you know, featured pride campaign people. You know, Nike always has, you know, the girls and the guys represented in their pride campaigns, etc. But I always say, if you're doing all of those displays of inclusion or plays toward inclusion, and for example, your company health insurance doesn't cover trans-affirming care.
Talk about it.
What are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, those are the things that are most important to me. So, you know, when I go talk to these different companies and stuff like that, that's one of the things I mentioned. It's like, it's good to give the girls money. Yes, keep giving the girls our coins.
Mm-hmm.
But also, how are you materially benefiting your employees, right?
Amen.
Who belong to these communities? Give them a free day off. Give them a day off or something, child. I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, let's take a quick break. All right. We got to pay a little bit of bills. When we come back, we will get into our Fanti BRB. Now, a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. You know, we talk about on this show all the time about trying not to burn out. Although, you know, we probably burnt out right now. That's why Jared is on hiatus, okay? So he can recharge himself. Well, if you are a little burnt out, maybe you're working too much, maybe you're not taking enough time for yourself, maybe you're just reading the news and you're like, oh my God, this is a lot to do. Listen, life can be overwhelming and many people are burnt out. Many of us without even knowing it, lack of motivation, irritability, fatigue, so many different symptoms can be the reason why you are burnt out. Well, BetterHelp Online Therapy wants to remind you to prioritize yourself, all right? BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you do not want to. It can be much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. I tell y'all every single time about my relationship with my therapist on BetterHelp. Miss Jacqueline be getting me together, telling me what I need to do, all that type of stuff. It's what I pay her for, okay? Our listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/Fanti. That's BetterHelp.com/Fanti. I also know for a fact that Jared is definitely partaking in his microdose drops from Lumi Labs, okay, while he is on this creative hiatus. He has called me plenty of times with more ideas for more work for me to do in these past 2 weeks, okay? And that's usually done when he's feeling himself, you know, if you know what I mean. You have probably heard about microdosing. You've definitely heard about it on this show. If you search around a bit on the internet, you'll find all sorts of people are microdosing to feel healthier and perform better. Our show today is sponsored by Microdose Gummies. Microdose Gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Jared uses it for creative stuff when he's writing or when he's trying to come up with all these things he wants me and him to do, right? I use it when I just, you know, need to ignore the phone and not answer Jared, right? And I just want to, you know, after a long day of doing edits on my book, I just want to wind down by myself and watch Foolishness on YouTube, okay? There's plenty of benefits. Creative boost, enjoying the moment, sleep, pain, anxiety, workout, and recovery. Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, just do a quick search online or go to microdose.com and use the code FANTI to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description, but again, that's microdose.com and code FANTI. Welcome back, beautiful people. As you know, we have with us today Dr. Jean-Paul, and they have a new podcast coming out next month that will be the catalyst for our discussion today. It's called the BFF Podcast. BFF stands for Black Fat Femme Podcast. It'll be out again next month over on iHeartRadio, all right? Mm-hmm. The tagline for the show is a podcast where the intersections of identity are celebrated. And what I find particularly interesting from the convos you and I have had, Jean-Paul, about your show and just the name itself is the particular aspect of being, right, that intersection rather of being Black, fat, and femme. We've had a number of conversations on this show about fat phobia and our relationships to our bodies. We've had Deshaun L. Harrison on to talk about anti-fatness as anti-Blackness. Amber J. Phillips has also graced us with her brilliance, as well as our good Judy, Ryan Mitchell, in his episode, which we titled Black, Queer, Invisible. He also spoke a bit about this intersection. And so I say all that to say, the Fanti fam has been primed a few times, you know, over for today's discussion. And so to get us started, before we talk about all of the bullshit, sure, that comes with living at that intersection, I want to start with what gives you the most joy, mm-hmm. if anything, about living at that intersection of Blackness, being fat, and being femme.
Yeah. So it's funny because, you know, I forget what day it was. I was actually at the Grove. I had to go pick up something for some of my students. Actually, you know what it was? It was the day that we did the filming for KTLA. So I stopped at the Grove to pick up some cupcakes for my students. Two of my students have the same birthday. And so I say all that to say I had on my heels, I had on a really cute fit, I had my bag, and there was a family who was like looking at me, and I was thinking to myself, I was like, oh Lord, what are they gonna say? And the woman said, excuse me, really loud, and she just looked over at me and her son like looking, and he started smiling, and they were just like, yes, bitch, work. And it was just this feeling of like, oh wow, like this, like I'm so used to like being on guard about, you know, how I show up in the world. It was the first moment where I felt like, oh shit, someone actually sees me, and this mom and this son, you know, they're finding joy in me being my authentic self. So I think for me, it was just this notion of I'm finally at a place, you know, I'm getting ready to be 37 this year. And I know a lot of people have a whole thing about saying their age out loud because it somehow makes them older. But I think a big part of what brings me so much joy is the older that I get, the more comfortable I get in who I am, and the more I'm giving agency to other people to see themselves, whether they be fat, whether they be Black, whether they be Black and fat, or they be Black, fat, and femme as a queer person, in ways and in spaces. And I think I'm also dating myself when I say this, like social media back in the day for me, like when I was younger, on MySpace, you didn't have people talking about intersectionality. It was very much people were trying to fit in. Everyone was doing, you know, what everyone else was doing. And I feel like in a way, I think the biggest part is that I feel like throughout the work I'm doing and the way that I'm living my life, I've carved out something for me that I feel like is creating a space and an opportunity for other people to find their way and to be able to create their own lanes too. And so, but even more, I'll say with that, and we'll get into talking about the podcast, which premieres on July 12th. I just want to make sure I make that clear because y'all better listen. I think it's really cool that a lot of the people who are affiliated with this show, you know, my co-host is Black, Fat, and Femme. The editor is Black, Fat, and Femme. You know, I've created opportunities. The person who designed my work is also a Fat Femme. So it's like, I've been able to kind of create this kind of, what's the word that Fran always uses? An ecosystem. I've created this small ecosystem of Black, fat people, Black, fat, queer people who are feminine or identify as femmes, to not only be able to get a bag, but also be able to see themselves in the work that we're creating as well. So
I love that. I love that. Okay, so the BFF podcast, how did even the concept, the idea of doing a podcast at that focuses on those particular intersections and the intersections of life in particular, I'm wondering if there is, was there a happening or something that made you go, I need a space to talk about my experience specifically.
Yeah. So how it started, I actually had started writing a book proposal back in 2017 that was putting different pieces of my life into kind of like perspective. Will I ever write that book? Who knows? But what I will say is that...
I see what
Jared is going through, and I say, ooh, girl, even Clarkeisha, me and Clarkeisha have been texting back and forth. Mama yes. is drowning in these book edits. So I'm like, maybe one day, but I don't think I'm going to do it. After writing a dissertation, I think I'm good. Yeah, 268 Let's pages, I'm okay. I already have a book out. But I say all that to say how this came about. I was in Lambda Literary in 2017. And so as I was working on my book proposal, as I'm in this program and I'm talking to people about, you know, intersectionality and my identity and all these different things, this book proposal was just kind of sitting in, you know, in my Google Doc, and I wasn't really doing anything with it. And so, you know, I kept going back to it and I kept editing it and I kept, you know, adding, you know, each year something new would come up for me, whether it was about, you know, this, you know, an awakening I had or a conversation I had with my therapist, or, you know, being more comfortable and stepping out in a heel or whatever the case may be. And so then when Next Up came around, it was actually a friend of mine who works for iHeart that said, hey, I think that you should apply for this. And I was thinking to myself, and they literally had told me like 2 days before the application was going to close. They were like, I think you should apply for this. And I'm going, I don't have nothing to pitch. And they were like, well, you better figure it out because you got 2 days to do it. And I was like, okay, bet. And so I literally just thought to myself after like reeling and reeling and going, what could I potentially do a show around that's not already being done? I mean, your show is fantastic. You know, I'm listening to The Friend Zone where there's mental health. I'm listening to all these great shows and I'm going, what else could I add to this conversation? And something just said, send them your book proposal. Send them the book proposal and see what they say. And that's exactly what I did. I just sent over the book proposal as an idea of basically saying, you know, we hear a lot about blackness. We hear a lot about queerness. We hear a lot about these conversations around being fat, but no one is talking about all three of them together and what it means to be that. And they loved it. And so I got picked up for Next Up. I did this whole thing with them for 6 months where they gave me the tools. They gave me kind of this understanding of what it really truly means to build out a good podcast. You know, I worked with different producers at iHeart. Shout out to them, because not only, and this is the other thing that was really cool about the process. And so if you all are looking for the Next Up program this year, keep checking because it is coming back for season two. They not only paid me to do this, but they also paid for everything in the process of building this podcast. So they were really big on, we want to make sure that we're not just talking about giving you a platform, but we're helping you have the financial and the support you need to build the podcast. So that was really cool. But I say all of that to say, I guess the concept really came from this lived experience I had, this idea of me feeling like every time I was in an LGBTQ space, no one was ever talking about what it looked like to be me and the pressure it felt to be. And maybe you feel this, Travelle. I don't want to speak for your experience, but this constant notion that, you know, you have to, you can't be all the things, right? You can't be too black. You can't be too fat in the queer spaces. You always kind of have to finagle one or the other in order to kind of survive in our spaces. And I feel like this podcast is really kind of this notion of like, no, we're not doing that over here. You're going to get a black ass podcast. You're going to get a fat ass podcast where we talk about food, clothes. We talk about everything. But ultimately, that's really what it is. It's just me wanting to have a space where I felt safe to really talk about everything that's in my head as, you know, someone who identifies with each of those identities.
Yeah, you talk about being in, you know, queer spaces in particular and, you know, feeling how you felt. It's interesting for me because I think while we are both black mm-hmm. and femme and, you know, queer and whatever other identities that we share,
yeah,
I I don't use the language of fat to describe myself.
Yeah.
Although I recognize that in our community, if you ain't got, you know, the washboard abs a lot of times, then people are calling you fat.
T.
Right? And so, like, you know, I'm in that middle area, I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I say that to say your reflections about feeling made, as I interpret it, feeling made to feel a way, mm-hmm, right, about mm-hmm who you are in those spaces, and particularly in a sense that's not just about your blackness, or not just about your femness, or not just, right, about your body, but the particular intersection of all of those and other identities I did not name together, I definitely kind of resonate with that in really interesting ways. I'm wondering, though, for you, when we had Amber on the podcast last, one of the things I remember her talking about was how, like, her relationship to being fat, to the word fat, has, like, changed mm-hmm over her life.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, you know, To be putting on a podcast called BFF Podcast, Black Fat Femme Podcast, it is a claiming of fatness, mm-hmm, right? In a way that you don't have to.
Right.
And so the question is, one, I would love to know, like, what your relationship is to that word, to having that word foisted upon you, etc.
Ooh, don't get me on here about to cry. I don't know why I'm getting so emotional. I think for me, it's just kind of this notion of, you know, so do you remember, that feeling of when Mariah Carey, so I'm going to take it back to the early 2000s for y'all. So there was a moment where Mariah Carey kind of spiraled out and felt like her life was falling apart. We kind of saw it happening on TV. Stay with me. I'll make the connection. And then we had the Emancipation of Mimi come out, and it was like, whoa, this bitch is back and she's badder than ever. That's kind mm-hmm of what it was for me, right? I feel like this podcast is the Emancipation of Mimi for me, in the sense of, like, you know, I was in college. So, you know, one of the questions you asked prior to this for me was, you know, what is my relationship?
The Emancipation of DJP.
Yeah, girl. Well, look.
Big purr.
Look. I'm going to put a butterfly somewhere on my body. I'm just afraid of needles. But no, I genuinely say, like, you know, in college, I remember the first moment that I realized, like, oh, you a big girl, was when I told a guy that I was interested in him. We were hanging out. We were having a lot of fun. I knew he was queer. He knew I was queer. And we were literally having a really good time. And when I told him that I was interested in him, he was like, oh, I don't date big guys. And it was like a mind fuck for me, where it was like, oh, my gosh, like, you know, it was always kind of like, oh, I don't date black guys. I don't date fat guys. I don't date this. I don't date that. And so for a long time, I carried this anger around not only just the identity of being black, but also this anger around being, you know, the fat phobia that lived in our community and the ways I was experiencing it in certain ways. Mm-hmm. And you'll probably never see these pictures, but there was a time where I had literally gotten down to almost maybe like 180 pounds. I was really skinny. I was really thin. And it had gotten to a point in college where I had friends and family reaching out to me being like, girl, you all right? Because I wasn't eating. I was working out close to like 2 hours a day. I was literally eating like, you know, the meal plan life, because you went to college too, right? So I was going into,
oh, yes, honey.
I was, you know, I was going to what we called the commons. And, you know, if I saw them putting too much food on my plate, I would be like, you need to scoop that off. You know, I was eating very, very, very little, and I lost a lot of weight. And even then it was kind of like, wow, like, I still wasn't really happy. Even though I was getting the attention from men the way I thought I wanted, I still didn't feel this peace with myself. And so as years have gone on and I've gained the weight back, and I wouldn't say right now I'm at my heaviest, because I'm not. I will say right now there is just this sense of, like, when I put my clothes on and I step outside the door and I, you know, and I see myself in the mirror, or I, you know, before I take a shower and I take my shirt off, you know, and I'm dancing in the mirror to, you know, whatever I'm listening to in the shower, I just feel so good. And I don't know if a big part of that is because of the life that I have and the life that I've created. But I think there's this sense of, like, fat no longer signifies hatred for me. Fat doesn't signify something that I dislike. I find fatness to be something that has really helped me really understand who I am. It has helped me understand my relationship to food. It has helped me understand my relationship to the way I see myself. It has helped me even to an extent. You know, I'm a huge Pelotoner. I Peloton every day. It has also helped me understand my relationship to weight, I mean, to working out, right? This whole concept of like how toxic the weight loss mentality is. You know, I tell people all the time, now I live in this mind frame of like, look, y'all trying to kill me for being black. Y'all trying to kill me for being queer. I'm not giving up food too. Like, I'm not doing it. Like,
I can't.
I'm not doing it. Y'all, I it's going to be one or the other for me. And it's y'all not giving me any other space. If the only place I'm finding joy is in a piece of cake, then hell, so be it. And so that's kind of I'm at, where it's like, you know, yeah, I'm fat and that's a you problem. You're the one with the issue around it. I can find clothes. Like, you know, I feel good. You know, I exercise every day. My blood pressure is fine. Like, you know, I don't understand what the big issue is. And so I think that that's the thing is like, I've reclaimed the sense of peace around it, kind of the same way I've resolved the anti-blackness and the femphobia / the anti-queerness of it all. And that's kind of what this podcast is it's celebrating this notion of like finding peace in all elements of your identity.
One of the things that Deshaun asserts in their book and when they were on the show was about how body size, right, contributes to the criminalization of Black folks, on the criminalization that sometimes we experience. And a lot of the examples that Deshaun uses in their book, right, are around these, you know, largely Black men who have been killed by police, right? Who have, you know, also been fat folks, right? From Mike Brown to George Floyd to Eric Garner. Actually, I don't know if George Floyd was fat, but Eric Garner, for sure,
a fact was,
was somebody who... And so there's also this element that I feel present in that discourse about how these, like, right, fat folks are also, like, how our bodies sometimes are wrongly convey to others, right, that they feel like they should be afraid, they feel like they should be in fear of their life. Those are the excuses, right, that we hear them say for killing us, right? But I'm thinking that projection that they do might have some further complications when we introduce being fat and femme to the discourse, and in particular fat femme, but like red as a man, right, to the world. So I say all that to say I'm wondering how this, like, quote-unquote issue, right, as society makes it, of being fat but also being femme, specifically, like, manifests for you. Like, in what ways have you seen the intersections that you live at being, like, read as a problem to the broader world? You mentioned the example with the person who said they don't date, you know, big people.
Ooh, chow. You know, I think that's been a big part of it, is a lot of my predating history. And I'm so fortunate, you know, I always say this, I'm fortunate to have a partner now who tells me day in and day out, you're beautiful no matter what size you're at. And so that has helped a lot, right? But I think that a lot of that has been...
John Paul's partner is also named Jonathan, which I think is so cute.
Yes, my husband's name is Jonathan as well. And so, yes, you have Jonathan and Jonathan Square. But I say all that to say that I think that a bigger part of it is just, I think for me, it's like, one, not necessarily actively looking for the issues, but there have been moments that people have said or done things to me. And I've been like, was that a read? I mean, case in point, right? So a couple of months ago, or last year, well, during the pandemic, not last year. I feel like the pandemic was last year, child. That's how much time is such a really interesting, but back in 2020, 2020, me and my partner had went out for a walk. I took a tumble like Scarlett and I hurt my arm. And ultimately, ultimately I had to go to the hospital. And so it was a very weird, you know, interaction in the sense of, you know, obviously doctors are always, they're always going to make a comment about your weight. But I remember the nurse coming in and her basically looking at, you know, the, when she took my weight. And she looked at me and she was like, wow, you're 320. You carry it so well. And I just was kind of like, was that a read? Like, well, I didn't know how to like play. And so my husband looked at me and I'm looking at him and I'm like, what was that? And it's stuff like that where I think people make comments about, you know, you or how you show up in the world and they don't really recognize or realize how it manifests. I think the other thing too, in terms of being fat and femme and not necessarily what a problem is, but I think a bigger thing is too, I think a lot about just Andre Leon Talley, right? I there's something about his life and, you know, rest well, you know, Auntie was a big girl. Auntie carried herself in a certain way. And I think that there's this idea in society and in this world, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that there's always this notion that we have to be jolly and that we have to be happy or we have to make everyone else happy around us. You know, this notion that we are ultimately supposed to always be, you know, the funny friend. We're supposed to be, you know, the funny partner. We always are cracking a joke. And so there's just little microcosms of microaggressions that I think that come with being fat and femme, specifically being Black and femme. Like even when people walk up to you and they're like, hey, girl, yes, I know it's a hey, girl, that's queer. But I also know it's the hey, girl, because you see me from a mile away. And it's also you feel comfortable enough because you think all fat Black people are friendly. Right. So like there's so many things that I, and again, like I said, I might be digging, I might be looking into it too deeply. But I think as a society, when we talk about, you know, Black fat, you know, heavy set, or even thinking about the stuff that people say too, like being comfortable enough to think that the stuff that folks on RuPaul's Drag Race, what they talk about, the big girls on RuPaul's Drag Race, is, you know, something that I feel comfortable discussing or having conversations with random people about. It's just this notion for me, I think the biggest thing that I've dealt with is this notion of people being too comfortable with me as a Black fat femme person, people feeling like I'm not going to clock them for some of the really terrible things that they say and do, not only just to me, but to other people. But I also think the other ways of too, of just not leaving me alone. Like even the looks I get when I'm out to eat, if I'm hungry, bitch, I'm going to eat. And that's the thing. Like, you know, don't look over at my table because I'm ordering three and four things. But you get the notion that you can always hear in the undertones. And shout out to fat people who are listening to this, because you probably know exactly what I mean. But it's not even in the things that people say or do. It's just the interaction. And you can always tell when it's wrapped in the femme phobia. You can tell when it's wrapped in the fat phobia, and you can tell when it's wrapped in both. And so I think for me, like, that's been the biggest issue, is just I spend at least maybe 60% of my day decoding the interactions that I have with people on what spawned that interaction. And I think that's the thing that makes it so exhausting. And I'm sure you feel it too as a femme person.
I was just about to say that idea, that aspect of like just having interactions with people and you like, now are they racist? Are they homophobic? Are they transphobic?
All of the above.
Because it is hard to live at a variety of intersections that are also marginalized, right? Intersections, and not be all of those identities at once.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, I remember, am I gonna say this? Yeah, they don't listen to podcasts, do we? I remember having a conversation with some folks in NABJ, for example, about what had been a number of negative experiences that queer people have had within the organization over the years.
Yeah.
And one of those individuals in particular, the remark that I got was, actually two of those individuals, the remark that I got to them was, you know, Was it the fact that they were gay that people had issues with, or was it the fact that they're annoying that people had issues with, right? Or was it the fact that they're gay or queer that people had issue with? Or is the fact that she's loud and assertive?
Yeah.
You know, all of those different things. And my response every single time was, it's all of that.
Yeah.
Because you can't divorce it, right?
Yeah.
Like it because all of those identities contribute to how and why the person is showing up, how they show up. And even more so, to your point, those of us who come from marginalized experiences, we know when y'all playing in our face.
T, always.
We feel it.
Always. I always know.
We know.
And there are moments I'll stop and be like, you really want me to go off, don't you? Like, I just, ooh, I know you do, but go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but like, you know, you and maybe you don't know why.
Yeah.
Right, you don't know the specific identity marker that might be a flag here, but you know something. Like, that bitch just tried me.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And
yes.
It's like, I'll say it this way. It requires us to either always be on alert,
yeah,
or always be blindsided,
mm-hmm,
about how we are moving through the world. And neither one of those approaches or stances is like good.
No.
You know, like being on alert, yeah, or being blindsided. Like neither one,
yeah,
you know, mm-hmm, is cute. So that's what you're sharing kind of reminds me of, makes me think of. And, you know, I recently, you know the context of this story, but the people listening don't, because you can't, because she signed an NDA. I was recently involved with a thingamajiggy.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I learned throughout this thingamajiggy was the term body neutrality.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which was introduced to me as a concept in the middle, basically, between body positivity and body negativity, where it relieves folks of the pressure of having to be positive,
yeah,
about their body.
Right.
Like, maybe you don't like your body, and it's okay to not like your body, but you can also at the same time be grateful for your body that, yeah, it has brought you where it has brought you, and still not, you know, like it for whatever reason. That's my interpretation of how it was presented,
mm-hmm,
to me.
Okay.
I know that you are often involved in a lot of conversations about quote unquote body positivity,
yeah,
about, you know, our relationships to our bodies. I wanted to hear, especially as you mentioned before, you, baby, you one of the people in my life who work out the most, okay? You is always on that Peloton.
Yes, baby.
Two and three times a day.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen you post about it. And so I wonder how all of that factors into your thoughts on body positivity, body neutrality, your relationship to just like talking,
mm-hmm,
about the space,
yeah,
that you need,
yeah,
because of the body that you have.
Right. Yeah. I personally live in this world of, I don't like the pressure that we put on ourselves to show up in a particular body for people who don't,
mm-hmm,
really know us, who don't care about us, right? If the first thing that you see for me is my size, then we ain't got nothing to talk about. Like that's the way I move in this world of, my size has nothing to do with you, per se. Mm. Oh, I care about your health. No, the fuck you don't. Because if you did, you'd be paying for my Peloton membership. Like that's the kind of stuff that I think about, right? Like, there's this coding of, you know, people constantly mitigating how you, I guess, mm-hmm, the biggest thing for me is that people who constantly feel the need to comment on other people's body, I've moved away from this notion of needing validation from other people in regards to how I look, quote unquote, in this world. In regards to my own experience and my own journey around body positivity and body, you know, neutrality, which is a new, kind of a new term to me because I hear it and I understand it. I think for me, my biggest thing, mm-hmm, is I'm just, I guess, with everything that's going on in the world, and I'm trying not to make this so heavy or make it deeper than what it really is. There's just so much that we're all having to take in. And I think I'm just in this place of I'm not going to continue to add to that, right? I already have the stress of trying to stay alive as a Black person. I already have the stress of trying to stay alive as a queer person. I already have the stress of trying to stay alive as a Black queer person. And so now you're trying to tell me that I also have to put the stress on me about how I look in this world or how my size show up. I'm not doing that. I think that that's finally what it is. It's not that I've given up. I think for me, it's just this notion of I'm okay with being fat. I just am. And it's not stopping me from anything, because I always like to say, you want to talk your shit about my size, but I also would love to see you jump on a Peloton and ride with me for an hour and 30 minutes, because I can almost guarantee
you. Girl, I can't do it, sis.
You couldn't. You wouldn't last.
You ride.
In a hidden hill ride. You right? Like, I always like to tell skinny folks that, because I see skinny folks. Like my friend, no shade to Lisa. I love Lisa. If she's listening, or if she will be listening, she'll know that this is not shade. My friend Lisa is in shape. She is in shape. And she has said, oh, let's ride together. And when we got to our second ride, it was a climb ride, because I love to do a climb right after hitting hills. She was like, nigga, is you crazy? And I said, I just enjoy it. Like, I enjoy. So for me, I think the biggest thing is I think I've just gotten to this place where I understand how powerful my body is at this size. I understand how beautiful it is that I can do things that people think or people live in stereotypes around this idea. And I think that that's what body positivity is for me. It's being able to do the things that make me happy in this body. And that's the way I dress. That's me eating what I want to eat. That's me getting on my bike and riding for however long I want to ride each day. I think that that's really what it is for me.
I love Jonathan because we went to get some chicken last week.
Yes.
And it was delicious. John, before we hop to our break, tell the people where they can specifically find you and all of the wondrousness that you do on the socials.
Yeah, well, you can find me at Dr. John Paul. That's DrJonPaul. You can visit my website at www.drjohnpaul.com. You can also visit now the podcast on Twitter. It is the Black Fat Pod. And so you basically are the Black Fat Fem Pod. You have to spell Black, B-L-K, because Twitter wasn't trying to give us a whole bunch of different, they weren't trying to give us all of the letters that we needed. So it's the Black Fat Fem Pod, and you spell it F-E-M-M-E. Or I should spell it all out. It's at B-L-K-F-A-T-F-E-M-M-E Pod. And yeah, we're basically on iHeartRadio. We'll be dropping every Tuesday. So yeah, I'm just really excited to be able to create something that other people can see themselves in.
Love that. But John Paul's not leaving yet.
Oh, no.
They're going to stay around for honorable mentions in just a little moment. As always, would love to hear what you all think. Hit us up on social media using hashtag FantiFam. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and the Tickety Talks, sort of, at Fanti Podcast. We will be right back.
Hi, I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin.
And the three of us host The Flophouse. It's a podcast where we watch a new bad movie and then we talk about it.
Dan, you say it's hosted by the three of us. We've had a lot of great guest co-hosts like Gillian Flynn, Jamel Bowie, John Hodgman, Jessica Williams, Wyatt Cenac, Joe Bob Briggs, Josh Gondelman, Roman Mars.
Yeah, and you said new movies, but what about the time we did Meatballs 2?
Okay. Yeah, sometimes we do older movies and sometimes we have guests, but mostly it's about us talking about like recent bad movies.
And don't forget about the ones where I made you do a role-playing game where you played cartoon dogs.
All right, yeah.
Shouldn't a promo be a really simple explanation about what our show's about? So what's the show about, Dan?
What's it about?
What's it about?
It's about friendship, all right? It's about our friendship and how we love each other.
The Flophouse. It's a podcast mostly about bad movies on Maximum Fun.
Do you sometimes wonder whatever happened to the kids at your school who really loved Star Trek?
You might remember a kid like me, the one who read the Star Trek novels and built starship models. I also took music classes to avoid taking gym classes that required showering after, but I don't see what that really has to do with—
Or a kid like me! I introduced myself to kids at my summer camp one year as Wesley, but when the school year started and some of those kids were in my new class, I actually had to explain to my friends that I had tried to take on the identity of my favorite Star Trek character. The shame haunts me to this day.
I'm sure some of those Star Trek fans from your childhood grew up to have interesting and productive lives, but we ended up being podcasters.
On The Greatest Discovery, you'll hear what happens to two lifelong Star Trek fans who didn't grow up to be great people, but just grew up to be people who love jokes as much as they love Trek.
So listen to our new episodes every week on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, beautiful people. Normally, we would get into our listener feedback segment, but I'm going to hold that. Jarrett will be back in 2 weeks, and we have an all-listener feedback episode. We call them What Was Said, and so we will get all of your thoughts and whatnot there. And so now it's time for our dishonorable mentions. These are the stories or people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out, either for their good or their stupid. John Paul, you have three things for us. Take it away.
I do. Okay, so for my honorable mention, I genuinely just wanted to shout out Niecy Nash and Jessica Betts. I see them.
Ooh, they fine.
Ain't they cute? They are the cutest to me. And I say cute not to be, not to mitigate what they are doing. I think what they are doing is they are providing so much space and grace for queer, specifically queer Black couples in the public eye, mm-hmm. to see that you can be happy, that you can be a queer couple, and that you can both be successful. I mean, Jessica's music is taking off. Niecy, obviously, her career is she's been that girl forever and a day.
Period.
And so I just love what they are doing. So that's my first honorable mention. The second honorable mention. So at the top of the podcast, I had mentioned to everybody that I am a tech head. What that means is that I'm always looking at tech and kind of seeing what it's doing, how it's moving, and how it's helping to make our lives better. One of the things that was announced this week was Apple iOS 16 at the World Developer Conference that they do every year. They have a new feature that allows folks in toxic situations or in relationships that are really terrible to basically revoke access to whoever has access to their stuff. So if you're in a relationship or if you are in a friendship with someone and it's problematic and maybe you might be getting stalked or you may not feel safe around them and you want to break things off, there is now a new feature in the phone that you can go in and you can basically revoke all the access to them. So that means if they're on your Find My, they can't see you. If they have your passcodes, they change. If they have access to your iCloud account, that password also changes. So it just basically makes it a lot safer for people who are in situations where a lot of information is being shared with someone who's problematic. So I just wanted to say, again, I'm a huge, 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 huge supporter of folks who are doing DV work. And I think this is a great step in the right direction for technology and for folks like ourselves. My dishonorable mention this week, I had a few, but I'm going to go ahead and run this one down. I think the last thing I wanted to say is the people who are spreading the rumors about queer people being the ones passing around monkeypox, please knock that shit off. I don't know where that started.
Is that a rumor?
Baby,
it's a lie?
It is a real thing. There are people out there that are saying that queer people are spreading monkeypox. And I don't know where it started. I don't know how it started, but I'm really tired of hearing it. And so ultimately, I just want to say if folks kind of like the whole thing with COVID, there are a lot of people who have rumors and they believe. I don't know how. So this is my thing. All these people talking about stuff ain't got one degree. They ain't went to school for science in no shape or form and seem to know everything about monkeypox. Just stop. So that's kind of it. That's all I got.
So wait, so you telling me, I mean, I don't know, but I remember reading somewhere that the monkeypox was transmitted in a way that the homosexuals have sex, but the way homosexuals have sex is not they're not the only ones having sex that way.
Yes, that's just
I do remember reading.
Yeah.
And so people are specifically that's I did not hear that people were specifically saying that mm-hmm. it was like gay men.
Yeah, they have latched on to that,
or perhaps that gay men were like the main ones. That is interesting. Well,
yeah,
you know what we like to say on this show all the time is y'all people need to do your own research now. Okay, don't take Twitter word for it. Don't take me and John Paul word for it. Take your ass to the Googles. to the World Health Organization, yes, or the CDC or one of them motherfuckers, and then you get your information.
Somebody knows something.
In the name of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, that's it for you. Those are your three.
Can I also mention, too, I have one more here that's not on this list. The people down over there who did the Juneteenth watermelon salad at the museum, y'all can go to hell. Oh, no. Just wanted to say that. Y'all can go straight to hell because, you know, we're in 2022. None of that should be happening. Watermelon salad during Juneteenth. Sis, it's a Juneteenth watermelon salad.
Okay.
Fuck you.
Okay, but hold on. Okay, but hold on. Hold on, John Paul. Hold on, John Paul. We like watermelon.
No.
For a black
Juneteenth celebration. Watermelon salad.
Were they selling it or was it just present at the cookout?
No. This museum, I think I forget where it is. This museum was, I shouldn't say is. They were Indiana, thank you. An Indiana museum was selling a Juneteenth watermelon salad. Like I said, fuck you, because it is 2022, well, and you should know better.
What I will say has been interesting to witness is how much more Juneteenth is in popular discourse. Like, you know, this year, over the last year, you know, since it became, you know, a federal holiday or whatever.
Last year.
Did you ever celebrate Juneteenth when you were younger?
We had a Juneteenth parade. Yes. In San Bernardino, they would always do. It was always two parades that we looked forward to. We looked forward to the Martin Luther King parade. And we also, yeah, it was the Children's Museum of Indianapolis. Yes. They are the ones who did this. But yes, we had a Juneteenth parade. And so I was always familiar. I always knew what Juneteenth was. I got it. But yeah.
Well, and see, I learned of Juneteenth, I want to say probably when I was in college,
mm-hmm,
right? Which is interesting because I'm from South Carolina. Y'all motherfuckers know that. But that's interesting to me because now as we see Juneteenth as like a national holiday, basically, I always, once I learned of Juneteenth, knew it to be like a Texas-specific,
mm-hmm,
celebration. That, yes, you know, maybe in San Bernardino, y'all have a little acknowledgement or something.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting to see how it has ballooned. Anyway, that's me rambling about them. But yes, it seems like, you know, fuck them. They did the Children's Museum of Indianapolis, as you mentioned. They did issue a statement and apology on its website following the backlash on social media, as they should. Now to my honorable mentions, all right? Mm-hmm. First and foremost, a show that you all need to watch. On the Netflix, I mean, it's fuck Netflix, but, you know, y'all know what it is.
Forever.
The name of the show is Heartstopper. It's a new series, a nice queer series, has a wonderful trans character. It just feels good, okay? And if you like me, you just need something that feel good. It's an easy watch. Now, disclaimer. You know, the lead is white, but hold on, he got a black trans friend. Now, she does not get the oomph that she deserves, but it is just season one. It's only a few episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I like what they have done with her character. She's played by a young trans girl. So good. Anyway, check it out. Heartstopper on Netflix. And then last but not least, I just wanted to give a shout out to our latest BiCon. Okay.
Oh, yes.
Anjanue Ellis.
Hey, come on in here, sis.
Who, listen, I knew there was a reason I fucked with her. Okay.
Oh, yes.
All right.
Oh, yes.
Big her.
We know.
Okay, when she played Maddie Moss Clark, mm-hmm, in the Clark Sisters biopic on Lifetime, I said, I know something's going on here. I also, no shade. You know how queer people,
we just know.
We have that sense. We just, mm-hmm, know. Okay, so let me tell you a quick story. A few years ago, when I was still working at the LA Times, I was covering the NAACP Image Awards. For those who don't know, the NAACP Image Awards typically always happens in... used to always happen in Pasadena, I think it was Pasadena.
Mm-hmm.
And so we in Pasadena, we on the red carpet, and Anjanue Ellis, her red carpet style has always been interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's the type of person to like make a political statement through her outfit on the red carpet. And I just remember seeing her on the red carpet. And I said to myself, interesting. That's it. That's the end of the story.
But you knew. That's the thing. The ancestors said they're part of the communities.
And even if I didn't know, shout out to her. I'm glad that she came out by way of an exclusive story that she did with Angelique Jackson over at Variety. And so y'all should be sure to check that out. All right, let's get the hell up out of here. But before we go, it's time for...
Black History is happening every day.
All right, today's Black History, I should say this week's Black History is happening every day moment. I am giving it to Justine Lindsay, a 29-year-old Black trans woman who announced this week that she would be joining the Carolina Panthers' cheerleading squad, the Top Cats, making her the first trans cheerleader in the National Football League. I want to applaud her for that. That's amazing. You know, now I'm going to send up a prayer for you, Miss Justine, because I want you protected. I want you fortified. You know, come on.
Baby.
You feel me, John Paul. You feel me. Okay.
You know, you got to. Sometimes you can be excited and you can be concerned all at the same time. What James Baldwin say, duality? James Baldwin talked about duality. Amen. And that's exactly how I felt. When I was like, okay. White refrigerator. Okay, it's giving. But at the same time, you can be joyful and concerned. And I am both for Justine. So I'm blessing her. Yes.
But applause nonetheless to her. Shout out to her being a first. Before we go, this is the part where I'm supposed to tell y'all to go check out an older episode. I don't remember the name of the episode that John Paul was on back in the day, but you should go check it out. It was around this time last year, if I'm not mistaken. And so you should check that out. John Paul, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited. Anytime I get to be on the mic with you or you and Jared at the same time doing anything with y'all is fun. So thank you so much for having me.
Anyway, all right, beautiful people, listen, you know we ask you every episode, if you like what you hear here, okay, please share it with one of your friends, your mom, your daddy, your sister, your brother, your uncle, and your auntie. All right, tell them the wondrousness that we're doing over here. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, next week's show, any week's show, we are at Fanti Podcast on Instagram and Twitter and the TikToks. You can use the hashtag Fanti Fam so we can see all your wondrousness, and you can always send us an email at fanti@maximumfun.org if you'd like to become a financially contributing member. I have ran out of air, so I am slowing down. And this is gonna be interesting for y'all when y'all hear this. Anyway, if you would like to become a financially contributing member of the Fanti Fam, you can do that by going to maximumfund.org/join. Our music is brought to you by Corece. That's Core.ece, wherever you get Slay Worthy audio. Our graphics are by Ashley Wynn. Our producer, wait too early. Our editor is Will Hagel, and our producer is
Laura Swisher.
This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
Boondabah.